Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight 41 for comics originally released on October 26th, 2016. Now, starting us off in DC is Flash number 9. This is by Joshua Williamson as the writer, Jorge Corona on the art, or maybe it's George Corona, I'm not sure. And the cover here, which is by Carmen D. I'm really getting that one bad, aren't I?
Is that Placencia? Or is that somebody else?
I think it's somebody else. I think the Placencia is the colorist.
Colorist, okay.
It's Gian DeMonaco.
Gian DeMonaco.
Sure, we'll go with that.
Maybe.
The variant cover, Dave Johnson, that name I can pronounce, but that's a lucky guess. Now, the cover I've got, though, is a riff on the Flash of Two Worlds cover, because this is the Kid Flash of Two Worlds.
So was that Carmine Infantino that did that original?
You know, the Carmine to Carmine implies that, but I don't know.
Yeah, that would be my only guess. That's what that meant.
I'd have to go look up who did that cover, because it was Flash 123, and I'm trying to think if Carmine was doing stuff at that point. I mean, he was a longtime Flash artist, so it's entirely probable. I just can't say off the top of my head either way. This is really, we get the two Wally West.
Yes, it's Carmine. Carmine Infantino.
Oh,
yes.
Cool. All right. Again, yep. Awesome Flash artist.
Confirmed.
Thank you. This issue gives us the two Wally West Flashes, or Kid Flashes, or the Flash characters, whatever you want to say, meeting for the first time. And there's a certain aspect of having two Wally West Flash characters just being a little crazy, but I'm okay with it since I'm happy to have the original back. I wouldn't want to lose him again or lose the new one who's really not had any solid appearances for the most part as Kid Flash lately, or ever. He's had more screen time on the Flash show than in the comics. But man, the one thing I gotta say is the art style did not work great for me. It was a little bit exaggerated. It reminded me of kind of a Humberto Ramos riff, but not as well done. It wasn't working for me. The artist really, and I don't know that it's anything special the artist did, but the Barry Allen Flash costume with all the little lightning bolt jaggy stuff coming out of the center emblem and on the cowl and stuff like that just really wasn't working for me. But that's really, I think, more Jim Lee character design type stuff, or whoever designed this version of the costume, with just a bunch of extra stuff. That's more on that the costume design than the art. But there were aspects of the art here that just detracted from the story a little for me, but that's just my taste in style. I'm not saying the artist did a bad job. This was an issue, though, where they had pitched it as continuing the Flash's investigation into the events that began in DC Universe Rebirth. And I think that is generous at best, misleading at worst, a flat-out lie, potentially. But there were some decent things in this issue. It was not all bad. I liked some of the character moments. I liked seeing the two Wally Wests together, but I was hoping for more out of this issue than I felt I got.
Yeah, I'm with you. I've been hanging around this Flash comic for a while, and it's not been a great read for me. And you know, this art style didn't work for me either. And I'm mostly hanging around because of, you know, the promise of the Rebirth issue, the DC Rebirth issue. And what I kind of was hoping was this was going to be the title where we kind of continued that investigation and learned more about it. What makes the most sense, since this character was head and shoulders in, you know, the critical person in that title. So I keep thinking that it's going to kind of progress that storyline, and it hasn't done that very well so far. There's I get the sense from this that there some of the action in here, that there's some stuff going over in the Titans book that maybe is also moving it slightly forward in that investigation as well. The abracadabra reveal and things that I think was first must. It sounded to me, my inference of reading this, that it happened over in Titans.
Yeah, it happened in number 4 last week.
Yeah. That's cool. It'd be cool if it was, you know, kind of in a big in front and center, at least in like a B plot or a C plot of most of the books. But, you know, that's cool that they're actually getting to it finally here. Unfortunately, it's moving at a super slow pace. And what we are getting is just okay storytelling. I think the extra flashes interacting aren't really working for me. Then having two Wallys I don't like that much.
Well, two Wallys and two flashes.
Yeah. And it's just not exactly the best setup for good stories to be told. And it's just not working for me really well.
What frustrated me a little with this issue is we get the one point where he's having like a Speed Force vision of some sort. And what they're really teasing, frankly, isn't that big of a surprise to me. You know, Grodd, Captain Cold, Shade. I mean, heck, some of this we know what's coming just by reading the solicits, so that's not that big of a deal. What I did find interesting is there's this city that, it's like, I don't know what that is. Is that Gorilla City or something? It was too nebulous to be meaningful. Then there's the city on fire, whatever, with a flash kind of flag or whatever. Again, too nebulous to be meaningful. But then the chalkboard up above it I found interesting, because the formula on that is Johnny Quick's formula. So it kind of teases that we may get Johnny or Jesse Quick back. And of course, we get something at the end that's a major tease. But at no point do I think the Flashes were continuing any sort of investigation as begun in the DC Universe Rebirth. And there have been two other events I can think of where they really started to move forward, admittedly at a snail's pace, that meta arc at all.
Okay, explain the chalkboard to me.
Okay,
I didn't pick up on that reference at all. I just thought it was just like, you know, investigation formulas.
Well, the formula there of 3x2 parentheses 9yz close parentheses 4a, that is Johnny Quick's speed formula. That's what he would recite to kind of invoke his superpowers.
Okay.
Longtime fan of the character, so, you know, I recognize it on sight. And even if I hadn't, it's like, well, what the heck is that? I would have looked it up and I would have found that through Google.
The difference between John and I. One of the many. I'm like, I wonder what that is. Move on.
Well, and that's the thing with the two cities on either side of it there, I didn't have anything to be worth Googling even, you know? So it's like, that's a non-starter. But what they're doing here, what they're doing in connection with this over in Titan is kind of moving things a little bit further forward. Really, Titan is the one title where I think they're taking that meta arc of what they started with DC Universe Rebirth and doing the most with. But I felt there was some stuff over in one of the Batman books that moved some stuff forward a little, or actually two of the Batman books that moved some stuff forward in that regard. Not meaningfully in one respect and unexpectedly in the other.
During Monster Men?
Actually, no. If you go to the Detective Comics story before it, of the stuff that happens there, where a character is essentially taken off the board, that to me was enemy action moving the Rebirth story further forward. But then the first issue, when Batman's starting to go up and form his own little Suicide Squad kind of a thing, there's a one page there that's kind of too big to be an Easter egg, but moves forward one of the characters again from DC Universe Rebirth.
Gotcha.
But in a cryptic, is this ever going to go anywhere kind of a manner. And I don't expect them to just spill it all out rapidly. But you know what? It's been about 6 months, and there's not a whole lot to hang your hat on in terms of that stuff.
Yeah, I think there could be a few more dribs and drabs. And, you know, it would fuel the water cooler talk, if nothing else, and get people excited about things if there was a little more of it spread around.
Well, and they've got a reveal on the last page here hinting at a possible return. And by possible, I mean it's almost guaranteed. They wouldn't have been that blatant about it otherwise. But it's something that was just tacked on the end of the story.
Mm-hmm.
An oh-by-the-way kind of thing. And we've seen these sorts of teases as, oh, maybe we'll get this at some point, done better, frankly, on the Flash TV show than we're seeing here. So it's not bad, but the art didn't really work for me. The story didn't move as far forward as I was wanting. The fact that the two Flashes aren't even telling Kid Flash their name, and I kind of get why, but it's kind of weird, didn't work for me. But it was enjoyable, but I wanted more.
Yeah. Yeah, that was the thing about the identity thing. It was it is tough because, you know, if you're watching the Flash show, so many people know his identity in his circle, and it feels like, well, how could they not know who he is, because it's just obvious. It's just obvious, and I think we're beyond secret identities at this point. And it's weird that the worlds, the two different, you know, the television show and the comic kind of bleed together for me sometimes. And I'm like, why don't you do this like that one does? And you pick up this piece that one does and kind of do the best of both worlds. And it bugs me sometimes, but that's my hang up.
I think there's something that both sets of creative teams can learn from the other.
Yeah. But yeah, it was tough to get by this art style. It's very, a very stylized style that doesn't resonate with me very well. It's way too cartoony for me. I didn't think that it was a particularly engaging story, and a little bit confusing with all the different iterations of the character trying to interact there and trying to keep that all straight. So it's a C- for me, and I don't know how much. I think I'm probably done with this for a while, and I'll probably check back later when something exciting happens.
I can understand why you do that. I think this is one that you don't need to be following on a month-to-month basis if you're only looking for kind of that big picture arc or something of that sort. And particularly with a Flash TV show going on now, frankly, they're doing some stuff just better. I think they've got the advantage of it's easier to do certain sorts of reveals or teases or whatever in a much more showy kind of cool manner in live action than just on the printed page. As much as I wanted to give this a higher rating and stuff, I was left so wanting by aspects of it. I thought they didn't move the story far enough along and stuff like that. I'm going to go with a C+. This is something, though, that if it had been just a Jeff Johns comes in for an issue and they've got this stellar artist or whatever, this easily, the basic concept of this issue easily could have been an A+ for me. This could have been one of those strategic issues that just propels the meta arc forward significantly, turns things on its head or something like that, and it's like, oh wow, you know, but it didn't. It fell flat, and that was frankly disappointing and a little annoying.
And you know, it's got to be tough on the writers who are working with two sets of artists, and you know, having to communicate the, you know, they figure out how to communicate with one artist and get on the same page, and so that they can talk each other's language and it translates and tells the story the way it needs to be told. And then they switch up to another artist and either have to change the way they communicate that script, or the artist has to, you know, really do a good job of interpreting that script. And I bet you there's going to be some growing pains for these writers on a lot of these DC titles that are switching from one artist to the other, and they probably each have their own peccadilloes and ways of shorthand and communicating that they can't get a lot of consistency with. It's going to be a challenge to keep that really strong from artist to artist issue consistent. And so I think it'll be noticeable when they do it well.
I get what you're saying, but I'm going to play devil's advocate here and ask the question of how is that any different than a writer working with different artists on different books?
Right. I think they can.
I mean, they've got the same challenge there. It's just a little bit more pronounced because it's within the same story they're having to kind of flip gears or whatever.
Yeah, I don't know if Flash is just two artists or it's multiple. I'm not sure how many artists are going to be working on this book throughout its life. But I would think if you're Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo, and you come in on a book and you work out some of the kinks ahead of time on how you're going to who's how you're going to write and how that's going to translate and who's going to be able to make some audibles along the way and their input, and you work that stuff out, and then it probably takes a little bit.
I mean, I get what you're saying. You get into a groove as a creative team,
yeah.
And it's harder to get into that rhythm if on even issues you're dealing with this artist, odd issues dealing with that artist, and at any point, either one of those could rotate out for a different person.
Yeah, so, that's what I'm not sure about the number, the sheer number of artists it's going to be on this title.
And that may be one of the reasons why Rucka decided to go with two different stories, so he doesn't have to be shifting up that sort of a thing in the middle of a story for Wonder Woman. He's just telling two concurrent Wonder Woman stories. And it may be that he's writing them slightly different to, you know, work, mm-hmm. depending on the working relationship with each of the artists.
Because when it works, I think on the Superman family of books, I don't notice mm-hmm. at all. And I just really enjoy what's happening, the story that's being told. I don't notice any kind of jarring interpretations or art style changes. It's smooth and it's really a good, consistent experience. So it can be done.
Absolutely. I
can understand there'd be challenges.
Like, with Action, I've been feeling that way. They've swapped the artist once or twice, and it's like, hey, well, you know, it's consistent enough from the every other week basis that it's not jarring. Whereas yeah. this, I open the thing and it's like, well, this is different. We'll see how the increased frequency plays out over time at both the companies, because I do think it involves a couple of challenges they just haven't had to deal with on monthly books.
Mm-hmm.
Shall we move over to our Marvel book?
Yeah.
This is The Vision number 12. This is the final issue. It's written by Tom King. We've got Gabriel Walta on the art. And this has been a great series. This issue, you know, continued that, concluded that well. I thought it landed the ending well. I would have liked to have seen this go on further, but, you know, they told a really fun story here. And it's not one that had like an earth-shattering ending or things will never be the same again, sort of, you know, in a cosmic sense or anything. But it does leave the Vision in the Marvel Universe in a different state than when the series started. Specifically, I think this kind of family era of the Vision is going to be part of his backstory for the foreseeable future, possibly for decades. Because I think this is going to have as much of a long-term impact as the last kind of family era of the Vision, when he and Scarlet Witch had the kids and all that stuff back in the mid-80s. And that's had a profound impact over time on the Marvel Universe. I mean, two of the Young Avengers, currently over in New Avengers, Wiccan and Hulkling, or whatever they're going by these days, are not those kids from that miniseries in the 80s, but are kind of offshoots thereof. And I think Viv, being over in Champions, that character is going to be around in some capacity for a while, even when that series eventually ends in, you know, a year or so. Given the average lifespan of a Marvel title these days, I still think we're going to have some sort of subtle repercussions of this for quite some time. And to me, that's a successful story. It changed things. Something happened. I thought the art style here was good. There was a lot of voiceover for some of this, kind of explaining things that had gone on in the past. But it was kind of needed and kind of a fitting end cap of the series, and something that was very well set up in the first issue, even as early as I think the first page. So I was pleased with this issue and the series.
Well, yeah, I was really, really impressed with the way this series was constructed and executed. I think it had some really, really high marks throughout. Emotionally, really tugged at the heartstrings, and made me really care about the Vision as a character in a way that I never had before. Which is the mark of a truly solid writing, experience and reading experience is to put a character on the map for me in a way, where it wasn't before. I was just really impressed. I was a little disappointed in, you know, having read the Champions earlier, the stakes were not as high for me going into this. I kind of knew somebody I knew the daughter was going to be fine.
Yeah.
And that's unfortunate because up to that point, I didn't know anyone was going to be fine. And it could, everything was on the table. And so that was a little, it took a little of the punch out because I knew, well, I know the daughter's going to make it and kind of lessened the degree of tension, for me going into this final issue to find out what happens.
But if they had delayed Champions by about a month, a couple of weeks, and if they had solicited it with Nova, Ms. Marvel, and Ultimate Spider-Man visible on the cover, but everybody else kind of in silhouette, kind of hiding their identities, they could have withheld the information very easily that she was going to be a member and left the stakes up of, well, maybe at the end of this, none of the family survives.
Yeah.
So it was within their power to do that fairly easily.
It was, and I mean, I don't know if that's a nitpick on scheduling or what, but yeah, I just think that little bit would have really helped me enjoy this story completely because I wouldn't have had that. Could have been let off the hook a little bit, you know. And but yeah, up to this point, you just did not know. All bets were off, and it was all earned. There was nothing that I thought was shortcut or they weren't playing fair. I loved some of the hearkening backs to original stories that, you know, quite frankly, I didn't remember. I didn't recognize the exact language that was used in some of those earlier storylines until I read the back matter and saw exactly what it was referencing. But I thought that was really cool. And it was really cool homage to the history of the character and great fan service and stuff like that. It's just a step above. It is, you know, there's good comic storytelling and then there's that next level. And this is definitely that next level. Mm-hmm. And a lot of sadness in this issue as well, kind of spread throughout this series and punctuated by this and the goodbye between Vision and his wife was tough, and it was felt, and they're synthezoids, but they felt human to me throughout this, and especially in this issue.
Well, his Vision's brainwaves are modeled after Wonder Man's, pretty sure.
Okay.
Trying to think through, because Vision was created by Ultron. Ultron was basically, was built by Hank Pym. And I think his mind patterns, whatever they call it, you know, was the template for Ultron. And of course, we know how well that went down. And so there's an aspect of the potential of things going really, really not well. I mean, the fact that the neighborhood still seemed to be standing at the end, I wasn't sure that was going to be the case. Because the way they were talking at the beginning of this series, it looked like, you know, all hell was going to break loose and, you know, you'd be looking at the end at a two-page spread of a nice little suburban, you know, neighborhood or whatever that was just carnage and rubble and, well, it used to be nice in this neighborhood. It went to hell, you know? But that, you know, they went in some different directions here and stuff like that, but it had a lot of humanity to the story, to the characters, given, like you said, they're synthesoids and stuff. There was no guarantee that was going to be the case either. This is something that Tom King went in a very different direction than I think we had any right to expect, and he made it really work. This was a different look and take on the Vision than really we've ever seen before, which is saying a lot because we've seen a lot of different takes on the Vision. Again, he's done the family life before, but this was a lot of fun, and they leave the door open to another Vision series down the line that could pick up some of the plot threads or whatever from here, but they're not in a way that they're obligated to either. But I do think this is something that, even after the memory has faded that this title was published, the impact of what's happened in this title, like I said, is going to be felt for quite some time.
Yeah, just with Virginia, you know, some of the things that she went through, which was really the star of this book as well, and her arc and the Scarlet Witch tie-in, mm-hmm. and her dealing with that and that knowledge, and then the ultimate sacrifice that started in the last issue and concluded in this issue, and you know, she was kind of sacrificing throughout this series, and you know, was always for her family and, except for the dog, not a big fan of the dog, I guess she wasn't. And the, but the, just the final pin on it to kind of sacrifice herself for what remains of her family was just, was really, really well executed and such. I hope we could see, I don't know. I'm sure it's comics. We could find a way to bring her back in some form or fashion down the road. Since she's created, she could be recreated. It was just such a great character's arc for her. And, you know, that was a real standout, but there were so many standout in this series. I really enjoyed, Viv's, story arc as well with the boyfriend and leading up to, you know, her final pages in here as she's got off to school and she says, you know, her kind of closing remark that I'm not normal, and she heads off to school. And there were just so many, the prayer, was that her prayer? I think it was earlier when she did, when she kind of prayed to a God she didn't believe in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that was a powerful, powerful couple of pages there. And those things are going to stick with me for a while. Like you said, this is something that I'll put down. And, you know, when the final trade's released and they do, I'm assuming they're going to treat this well with a nice deluxe hardcover. This is one that I want to put on the shelf and glance at from time to time and just revisit, just because it was such a master class in comic storytelling, and hats off on a job well done to the creative team. Tom King kind of leading the way on that with his vision, quote unquote, for this story.
Yeah, anyone who has not read this, when it comes out in trade hardcover, definitely pick it up. This is just a really well done series, and it's got a lot of heart to it. It's got a good plot to it. They played fair. So it's not like I felt there were some story cheats or something like that, which always kind of annoy me or whatever. But I mean, they did some really just fun and bizarre stuff when they brought in, you know, Ultron's robotic son and how he's part of this family and such. It was just some really almost bizarre yet obvious takes to go with some of these characters that we just hadn't seen before. So definitely, really solid ending to a great series. For me, solid A, definitely something I recommend people pick up. And at this point, like I said, if you haven't gotten it, get it when it comes out in trade or hardcover.
Yeah, I am going to give it a perfect score. I'm going to give it an A+. It's really the best thing I've read this year, and really, really elevated the art form for me. Just a brilliant, brilliant work. And you've got to read this. I guarantee you'll enjoy it. It's a solid comic experience. And, you know, for Tom King, I think I need to go back and revisit his, I never did kind of, get into that Omega Man series that he did. I think that was a 12 issue series, and I didn't really keep up with it after the first couple of issues, but I might want to revisit that and see where his story went. To see if he kind of had that same magic over there that maybe I didn't give it a fair shake.
I did not feel Omega Man had the same magic this had.
Okay. Don't bother, is that what you're saying?
Pretty much, but your mileage may vary. Maybe it'll work for you better than it did for me. They just went in some directions, both with the Omega Man and the Kyle Rayner Green Lantern, I just didn't care for. With this,
and sometimes creators catch lightning in a bottle, and it's the right creator with the right character telling the right story at the right time in their life. And if you read the back matter for this final issue, you know, this story is really inspired by his wife, Tom King's wife, and her support for him throughout their life. And the fact that, you know, he was a struggling writer while she was supporting them, and all the sacrifices she made, you know, that's super personal for him, and not something you can replicate over and over again in every storyline. So maybe it was just the right story, right writer, and the right character, and it just all came together. That's quite possible.
Definitely. I've seen a few other cases where once you learn a little bit about the creator, either through back matter, an interview, or them talking at a convention or whatever, you realize that a certain project hit a certain very personal chord with them. And it's like, wow, it's like, of course he was channeling that character through him or vice versa.
It was meant to be.
It was meant to be. It was magical in some way, shape, or form. And there are a couple of writers that I think have had just some amazing runs on books, because again, they hit that note and things just fall into place. And it doesn't happen that often. So this is definitely one of those. It's definitely, any future, mini series or ongoing series with the Vision, this is going to be one of the things it'll be measured against.
Yeah.
And it's a high bar to hit.
It definitely is. And, I kind of wish it would go on and again forever. I kind of feel like I felt with the BBC series of The Office, where it was such a perfect show and I didn't want it to end, but I get why they stopped it. Mm-hmm. And, there's no way you're going to get sick of something that only goes 12 issues. And, well, I guess that's not the case, but you're not sticking around long enough for people to get tired of you. And it really is. It was just a perfect comic story, and kudos and hats off. And I hope we have many, many more like this.
I would also recommend the Vision and Scarlet Witch 12-issue series from the mid-80s I was talking about earlier.
Mm-hmm.
It's different era of storytelling, different sensibilities, and it was more kind of almost done in one issues, sort of real time throughout the year, if you will. So you have a Christmas one, you've got a Thanksgiving one, a Halloween one, those sorts of things or whatever. But it was a very interesting time in the Vision's life and Scarlet Witch's too. And as I recall, it was a good read at the time. How it holds up these days, again, haven't read it since. But it makes for an interesting kind of companion to this volume, because they're covering conceptually similar ground, but in just fundamentally different ways in terms of the nature of the storytelling, the era they were told in, and things like that. So worth thinking about.
Definitely.
Shall we move on to our other comic?
Certainly.
This is Generation Zero number 3 from Valiant. We've got Fred Van Lente on writing. We've got Francis Portella and Derek Charm on the art. Derek Charm actually does most of the issue, I think, with Portello and Dollhouse doing the quote-unquote real-world sequences. This issue opens with a very strong kind of Archie riff, if you will, that we quickly learn is taking place literally in somebody's mind.
But I don't know if we quickly learn it.
Well,
took me a while.
Yeah, 3 pages in?
yeah. But I thought, oh no, I've recommended another book that is not as good as the earlier issues. What are we doing here? This isn't even the right art style. I was freaking out. I was freaking out when I first started reading this.
Well, the note I had is opening with an Archie riff is kind of a risky move, because people unfamiliar with the property may take one look and just say, well, I'll pass.
Yeah, yeah.
And there were aspects of this issue I liked, but it was more old school Archie. I mean, it's not even modern Archie.
No.
You know, it's old school, kind of an Archie riff on it, and it works. And the whole heroescape, you know, people being the hero of their own story in their mind sort of a deal was interesting. But man, the story played out slowly. Way too slowly. And this was all as they were kind of interrogating this teenage girl. And at the end, they claim they learned something, but it's like, I have no idea what they learned. And
you know what it felt like? It felt like the regular artist, you know, something came up and he knew I'm going to be behind, or I'm not going to be able to keep up with the next issue. What can we do? Can we turn our wheels for a while? You bring in another guest artist to get us back, get us caught up so that I can get ahead a little bit, or something like that. It just feels like it's a total filler issue that just, nothing happened after two really, I felt really strong. The first two issues were really strong and a really cool world that they were building. And then they just really laid an egg, I think, here.
Well, and I mean, to me, I couldn't tell what they learned from this interrogation. And
yeah,
there was a middle chapterness of this issue that was incredibly pronounced. Filler in terms of, do they need to get somebody to catch up on schedule? It's the third issue. I certainly hope that's not the case.
It's felt that way, though.
But it felt completely skippable, in so much as good as aspects of this issue were in a slow moving kind of a way. You could completely skip over this issue because it's mainly commentary about a character who's not part of the long-term cast. Anything really important about it will get recapped in the next issue of, hey, we interrogated her, we found this out. And really, that's all we need to know. So it was kind of a color commentary that ultimately doesn't matter. And there are times where that could be a lot of fun if this was a fascinating character, which I would say it was not. It wasn't a bad issue, but it was atypical from what we've gotten so far. It's too early into the run to get this sort of a thing. Again, third issue here. And it came out feeling like, again, non-essential reading. You could go from issue 2 to issue 4, and I don't know that you'd have missed any major plot point whatsoever. Now, I could be wrong. I haven't seen issue 4 yet. Maybe this will turn out to be incredibly important. I'd frankly be a bit surprised. Again, everything that's relevant about this feels like you could just claim it happened off-camera, if you will, and just move forward from there. I expect more story progression than I felt we got in this issue, and I think part of it is, as good as the series has been, these characters of Generation Zero are spinning out of, or spun out of, the Harbinger War storyline, which happened from April to July 2013. This series should have come out 3 years ago. It's been too long.
Yeah, for me, it's a brand new IP launch, because I didn't read that, so... those first couple of issues, I thought, really did a good job of setting up who the characters were and what their kind of mission statement was. And then we met a character that they were going to help, and we're going to solve this mystery. And, you know, everything was kind of laid out in that first issue, and I enjoyed it. It was fun. And we haven't done a Valiant for a while. And, you know, Valiant has a very passionate fan base, and I like to try their stuff from time to time and see if I connect. And there was one that I had connected with, and I enjoyed those first two issues. And, you know, it had all the makings of a breakout hit for me. And I just feel like this was a real misstep, and maybe it was completely purposeful. And this is the creative vision of let's do this Archie riff. And I think people really like this deep dive into this character's psyche. And down the road, it'll really pay dividends or something. And I may have just missed that mark. It may have not just not worked for me. But it just felt like an in-between arc palette cleanser, or here's a zero issue type of a story that isn't really anything valuable to progressing what we're the plot that we're really trying to follow.
If it were a breather issue, I would be fine with that. But this is taking place in the middle of an arc.
And it's only issue 3, so there shouldn't be one.
The first arc.
Yes.
If you haven't read the Harbinger War stuff, you might want to go back and read it. It was basically the Harbinger kids, this group, and Bloodshot all kind of intersecting and stuff. And really set up some of the early aspects of the Valiant universe. And I think Valiant's doing some really good stuff, but they've got enough of a crop rotation kind of going on by swapping out titles and whatnot, not that... Whenever I do find something I'm really liking, it's often, granted it's not unique to Valiant, I would say it's also fairly true at Marvel, within a year it's over and they moved on to something else. And they may circle back to that character after a while, but will it be the same take? I mean, I really like the first Archer and Armstrong series, whereas the current A&A I like, but not as much.
Oh yeah, I agree with that. That was one I was looking forward to as well. It totally wasn't the style I was hoping for. But I mean, I think they kind of know what they can handle, how many titles they can put out simultaneously and give the care and feeding that they need to make them successful. And if their stuff is, you know, suffering from attrition and falling back to 8,000 copies a month, well, let's kill it and try something else and see if we can't keep some sales juice going.
What I find interesting is it's not just abort this and move to something else. They seem to be enough ahead of the game that they're able to rotate through things with some continuing plot lines going, even if there's some awkward gaps.
You would know better than I on that. I didn't realize that.
Because again, this is kind of these characters on the heels of their adventure 3 years ago. not necessarily immediately on the heels, but it just as easily could have been.
But didn't we you mentioned something like that about Faith, that when the Faith title came out, she was coming from a title that was
Harbinger's.
A long time had passed, maybe too much time had passed, and the heat was off of this character.
Well, and on the back cover of this issue, they're promoting Harbinger Renegades number one, a new ongoing series where they're getting some of these Harbinger characters back together again, because they'd kind of been on the back burner while they were doing other stuff at Valiant. And I get that, and I applaud, I really appreciate them keeping a finite, manageable number of titles coming out to where it's not just flooding the market. I mean, they could just as easily try to do twice as many titles. They're smart not to. But it's a little frustrating to get into something again, it lasts for a while, it goes away for a year, it comes back, whatever. It's hard for the properties to kind of build up the momentum they need to be sticking around long term. But again, they've seemed to have pretty much mastered the title rotation aspect, and it seems to be working for them. But as a reader, I don't like the, you know, get hooked on something, go for a little bit, oh, it's gone, let me find something else kind of thing. So,
And with the first two issues, I thought it was pretty smart. I thought it was pretty smartly written, and it liked the setup, and it seemed like a pretty smart title. This issue didn't feel smart to me. At one point, there's a group of villains who, I guess, can only transport themselves through right angles. So they go find a roller skating rink because it's around and hide in there. And I just felt, this is really kind of dumb. These are dumb plot points. These are dumb choices for the art here. And I don't feel like I respect what they're saying in this particular issue of this title.
I agree. I think the previous two issues were better written. I think the Edgemen or whatever they were within this issue almost came out of nowhere. We need some major threat. Oh, they're here. Let's go run or whatever. It's just, or the Cornermen, whatever they were. This issue would do better for me if I read it in trade or in rapid succession with the issues before and after. As a solo issue, it kind of fell flat for me. And given that most of the Valiant books, Exo being the notable exception, which hit issue 50 recently, most of their books are going, again, about the year or so as is standard these days. For them to have allocated a full issue to this, kind of frustrating.
Yeah. If the roles were reversed and we were mostly in the, you know, the real world art style, those pages worked much better for me. So if we had the bulk of it there and just a little bit of this little whimsy art style, but not the predominance of the entire issue, I would have been okay with it a little more. I'm hovering on that C-D+ range. I'm pretty disappointed in this issue, but I'm going to give it the C- because of the first two, the strength of the first two issues. And there is some good stuff here with the real world art. Enough to keep it out of that D range, but not by much.
I can see that. I'm going to go with a C+. They at least did a good Archie riff, if even it went too long. So it's not like it was a completely horrible issue. It's just one that wasn't essential reading, which is annoying. I think part of it is I'm a little over this whole fantasy thing of let's go into the dreamscape, or the blood squirt character we've gotten over in Bloodshot and stuff like that. It's like, I don't need that. I don't want that.
Or Moon Knight number 7.
Or 1 through 6 to a degree.
but 7 to the nth degree.
Yeah.
Like, what is this? This is not what I've been reading. What happened?
There's an aspect where that break from reality breaks me out of the story. Mm-hmm. And I'm not looking for reality when I read a comic book. I think this series is better than this issue showed us, but it's the issue we had in front of us. Mm-hmm. So kind of a shame.
Yeah, so one we should probably touch back on an issue or two from now and see if it's righted the ship or continued to go down this hole.
Maybe the start of the next arc.
I probably won't. I won't be around if it does. If it continues this way. But boy, there was some promise in those first couple of issues, I think.
Yeah. It's certainly something we should check back on. And again, Valiant's doing some good stuff just in general. So last week I was doing pretty good on my reading. Have not done enough reading, so I have not finished last week's books from the 19th. I've still got over 36 left. Got nearly 46 from this week, so I'm like a net loss of 30 in that regard. But next week's only going to be 42 issues, which is the second smallest week since Comic-Con, so that'll be nice.
Great.
Did you read, are you current on Action Comics?
That would have been this week. No, I didn't read that one yet.
Oh, okay. Some of the stuff we talked about when we reviewed it a couple of weeks back.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Kind of, it's like, yep, I called that. Not that I thought it was hard to call. Number of things I was reading, because I'm doing a little from both weeks. I've read about 15 from this week, 25 from last. A lot of things ending over at Marvel these days. Mockingbird.
Yeah, that was a an internet storm over the creator of Chelsea Kane. Mm-hmm. Some of the internet trolls really took to her feminist agenda on that book, and most of the comics community came to her aid. So it was an interesting flare up in the Twitterverse over there when that cancellation announcement happened.
That's disappointing. Both it was canceled, that there was a flare up and all that kind of stuff. I was enjoying the book a lot.
I enjoyed it a lot as well, and was surprised that it was canceled.
Yeah. What gets me is, and I don't know if it was that book or one of the many other books that it says, oh, I guess this is ending now. Because what happens is I get to the end, it's like, the end, there is no more, there's no teaser for the next thing. You go to the letter page or whatever, and instead of letters, you get the tearful goodbye from the creative team. Oh, I had such high hopes, this would last forever and ever and ever. But whoa, after a year, it is over. So soon, I'm like, dude, this, no books last more than a year these days, it seems like.
Yeah, we or we get the Chip Zdarsky in Howard the Duck, where he's like, I can't believe I didn't get fired after issue one. How in the heck did I make it to 11 issues? So that was also, but it's been an awful lot of these final farewells lately. It seems like they're coming in bunches.
Well, I think Marvel's at the point where a lot of their titles are playing out before they get the next round of replacements. So we've got a ton of number ones coming up, and we've already been getting some of them. But the so long and thanks for all the fish kind of goodbye in the letter page sort of a thing, for something that lasts 12 issues or under, really?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm not saying they shouldn't have a, hey, we're gone, this is where to go find the other characters sort of a deal or whatever, but it's not like some of these people have been on a book for 10 years or something.
Yeah. Now, do you think Briggsland ended with issue 3? Or was that just the end of the first arc?
I was taking that as end of the first arc. I'm trying to think if I read that issue yet.
It felt like it could be final, but there was no mention of it being final, and there's no 3 of 3 parentheses in anything. But it felt like, well, they could just walk away if they wanted to. But then again, they have an awful lot of characters they just introduced and didn't do anything with. So
no, I think that's end of an arc. But I want to toss this out to the listener community, because this is something that, with the number crunching and some other stuff, and just my own tracking of what I'm getting, how from the information released in previews, the solicitation list, the shipping list, that kind of a stuff, how can you know when a title ends? Because I've had a lot where it's, is it just not shipping for a month or two? Is it over and done? Is it gotten replaced? It's obvious when, let me rephrase that, it's not always obvious that a number one issue is the first issue, because sometimes that's not even true. But there's no end of series marker on these things, and that's really annoying me, because I just read the most recent Ant-Man issue, and it's like, is the series over? You know, I don't think they've solicited more, but I'd have to go dig around and check. But when you've got titles that take 2 months hiatus or whatever, like a saga or something like that, you can't even use that as an indicator that the title is over. Because I'd like to be able to attribute, you know, how many sales in a given month are lost because the title ended. To do that, I need to know the title has ended. And that's something that I am finding surprisingly challenging to do from the data I have at hand.
Mm-hmm.
Now, anyone who says, well, you just look at the end, it says the end, how hard could it be? Great, go do that for a couple hundred comics a month. It just doesn't. I don't have the time for that. You don't. If you do have the time for that, please let me know. I'll tell you how to give me the data, and I'll be happy. But I'm willing to bet nobody's going to volunteer for that either.
No.
So, but it's when I go through a batch of comics that I'm reading, and it seems like almost every other one is, "Yep, we're done." It's surprising. And again, I knew it was coming.
And they do come in bunches. It's weird.
Well, I think it's a little more pronounced over at Marvel these days because of the post-Secret Wars stuff. They started a ton of titles all at once, and a bunch of them just kind of played out around the same time.
Yeah.
So I think that's part of it. This episode is going to go up on November 7th. I mention that because November 8th here in the United States of America is Election Day. Go vote. Everyone should go vote if you're eligible. And if you're eligible and not registered, that's really unfortunate. Don't let that happen again. Civic duty to go vote. I voted early, so I've already voted. Hopefully everyone will, and hopefully everybody will be happy with the election results, whatever they may be. And then, on November 12th, that Saturday, we're gonna do the, comic page teleconference. That's on Skype. That's at 7 p.m., Central Time. It's, basically, we talk about comics. We'll possibly even talk about the election results and whatnot if that's relevant or people want to. It's whatever comes up. And then on December 10th, the morning of that Saturday, that will be the deadline for the next preview spotlight. Hopefully people will – actually, Thanksgiving will be the week before previews comes out because it'll come out on the 30th. But online solicits will be on up, so you know people can send in clips early, of course. And then on the 17th of December is currently when I think the next teleconference will be at that point. So plenty of good stuff coming. Plenty of comics coming out, too. I mean, I've got 2 weeks worth of comics and just about fills up a short box. It's scary how many of these things they're publishing.
Yep. I'm reading more than I've ever read before, and it's a good problem.
It's a good problem, but it's really hard for me to be keeping up.
Mm-hmm.
So I need to be taking a closer look at some of what I'm getting and determining, do I keep getting it or do I ratchet back a little bit?
Yeah.
And if so, where?
That's why Flash got the axe today. I'm just not cutting it, not doing it for me. Got to move on. It's only so many hours in the day.
Mm-hmm. But again, that's why I enjoy the preview spotlight and stuff is that's where I find out about new things and learn about things to determine if they're right for me, because it could be a great comic, but not something I need to read. And, you know, different people, different tastes. Anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
No, I think that does it.
Cool. Join us next time as we discuss Flintstones number 5 from DC, Unworthy Thor number 1 from Marvel, and Myopia special number 1 from Dynamite Entertainment.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.